The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Moudou, and welcome to Health Chat. Let's start with some data. Get this. 2.5 billion people lack access to improved sanitation. 748 million people lack access to improved drinking water. It is estimated that 1.8 billion people use a source of drinking water that is fecally contaminated. That's according to the World Health Organization. Hundreds of millions of people have no access to soap and water to wash their hands, preventing a basic act that will empower them to block the spread of disease. As a result, diseases like cholera and malaria are claiming the lives of many children and adults. On the program today, we will discuss this issue and look at how it is being addressed in some parts of the world, in particular in Africa. And joining us via phone from Boston, Massachusetts, is Saran Kabat-Jones, founder and CEO of the organization Face Africa. Ms. Jones, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's good to have you. Also joining us via phone is April Davis, Senior Manager for Africa and Latin America with the organization water.org. Ms. Davis, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I look forward to the conversation.
That's great. We do as well. And we will start discussing the importance of water and sanitation in a moment. But first, an international NGO is drilling boreholes in Malawi to provide fresh drinking water and building latrines for family use. Lamek Masina has this report from the Malawi capital, Blantyre.
The water and sanitation project was prompted by a study showing that Chikwawa, a district of near 500,000 people, has relatively few toilets or other facilities supporting public hygiene. Kate Halawa is the country director for Water for People, the non-governmental organization sponsoring the effort.
When we came in Malawi to start working in Malawi, we looked at the statistics and we found out Chikwawa was one of the least safe in terms of water supply and sanitation. At that time, it was around 45% access to safe water, and sanitation was very, very low. And you know, here also, there's a high percentage of people that openly defecate.
Halawa says to avoid the situation, the organization is drilling boreholes, starting with Makuira, Kasisi, Jabananga areas under the traditional authorities, where there is high risk of contracting waterborne diseases.
We've done more than 200 water points, and this year we're doing 41, and next year we're doing 100 water points.
The project is also hoping to build latrines in individual homes. Health experts say the initiative has helped to reduce instances of diarrhea among the 8,000 households in the district. They say before the introduction of the project in 2008, the attack rate of the disease was at 0.2% of the district's population, which they say is the highest by world standards. Today, it's been reduced to 0.007%. Beatrice Munyowa is one of the health instructors in the district.
Timauza kuti azita kwa vindikira mazi ajakatonga, komaso ngadipali mankwala chlorine timata kwa.
She says to maintain the hygiene standards, they provide chlorine to the communities for treating the water and also advise them to always cover the water and always keep clean the borehole surroundings. Besides advice from health experts, villagers themselves have formed their own committees responsible for the sanitation and the maintenance of the boreholes. Emily Batmeo is the secretary of Water Point Committee at Kasogeza Village. She says apart from the reduced incidence of waterborne diseases, the project has made it easier to access clean water. She says before the initiative, people were used to travel long distances to fetch clean water. For example, she says they would wake up early in the morning to battle for clean water at a water point which was as far as 3 kilometers away. Sometimes, she says, would spend a night there. The organization is implementing the project with support from international NGOs, Global Sanitation Fund, Charity Water and Climate Justice Fund. Halawa says funds permitting, the NGO is planning to extend the initiative to the rest of the district to reach its goal of ensuring that everyone has access to safe water by 2018. Water for the People has a similar project in the other parts of Malawi, in the peri-urban areas of Blanta and in the northern district of Rumpi, and in Rwanda and Uganda. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
Again, ladies, thank you so much for joining us here on the Voice of America. Now, we heard in this report, and as I mentioned earlier, that many people do not have access to clean water and proper sanitation. Ms. Davis, could you please give us a sense of some of the common waterborne diseases that we see in sub-Saharan Africa in particular?
For that question, one of the most recent, I guess, one of the more famous cases of an outbreak of a waterborne related disease is the recent Ebola outbreak in West Africa that has to do with not only hygiene and sanitation, but also with, you know, making sure people aren't ingesting water that has diseases in it as well. Other examples could be anything from E. coli, diarrhea-related diseases. You mentioned malaria a little bit earlier, and also worms, such as guinea worm, worms, other hookworms that related to hygiene and soil, and then also diseases that are related to people going into water, such as schistosomiasis, or also trachoma with flies hatching in water. So there are quite a few water-related illnesses.
Yes, indeed. Now, you mentioned the Ebola outbreak, which has some aspect of water-related aspect to it. And that brings me to you, Ms. Jones. You work in particular in Liberia, which was one of the countries where the Ebola outbreak has been happening. Liberia recently was declared, well, has gone 21 days without any new case of Ebola. Now, before we get into the Ebola outbreak, can you give us a sense of why it was important for you to get involved in ensuring that populations in parts of Liberia have access to clean water?
Absolutely. And the outbreak in Liberia and Sierra Leone and Guinea really understand even more the important role that access to safe water and sanitation and hygiene plays in overall health benefits. And WASH organizations like Face Africa really played an important role in helping to turn the tide against Ebola. And one of the main ways of actually, you know, reducing the spread of Ebola virus disease was proper and frequent hand washing. And obviously you can't do that without access to water. So our role was not just, you know, to raise awareness about the disease, but also to provide water infrastructure, provide so that
okay. All right, Ms. Jones, we're having a little problem with our line connecting to you. I think we're going to resolve that very quickly and get you back on so we can answer clearly. We can understand clearly what you are saying. In the meantime, Ms. Davis, let me come back to you. You spoke on some of the issues that are related to water and proper sanitation. Can you speak on some of the very basics when it comes to sanitation? What would you say are the very basic steps to ensure that people live in conditions that are safe and considered healthy?
Definitely. Well, the first step to take is when a community hasn't had any improved sanitation or exposure to improved sanitation before is to get people to realize that defecating out in the open is not something that is okay, and this is an activity that increases illness and the chance of people getting ill, especially children. So the first step would be to help people to realize that they should try to go to the bathroom in one place. Now, whether that's digging a hole and making a very simple pit latrine or making a little bit more complex latrine that's lined with cement so the feces doesn't leak into the soil or leach into the soil, those are all different options for really basic sanitation designs in a place that, especially rural communities that have never had access before.
Mm-hmm. And rural communities, I think these are the key words, because when you go to most cities, people have access to proper sanitation. They have the toilet and other means of keeping clean. But when you go to the rural area, that's where most of the challenge is. Now, what are the steps in terms of ensuring that people are up to speed with what is needed to done, especially when it comes to sanitation? We understand that access to clean water is a challenge. We know that clean water is always the safest way to go, and that would be very easy for people to understand. When it comes to sanitation, how do you handle this?
Right. There are quite a few different education methods that Water.org and our local partner organizations use to educate people about safe sanitation and improved hygiene. One of those methods that is very popular is called community-led total sanitation, in which communities come together and learn as a group, adults and children and leaders, about why lack of access to sanitation is so important, and why trying to work together as a community to solve the challenge is really important as well. It's good to link health outcomes to access to sanitation, but then also in sanitation marketing, we use status, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to have access to a toilet. It's a nice thing to have when guests come over, for example, to be able to show the folks coming over to people's homes, if they have to use the restroom, it's nice to have a latrine. So between health and status, I think those are the two messages that are most important to teaching communities about improved sanitation.
Okay, and Ms. Jones, I'm glad you're back. I hear we have you back. Now, let me come to you, and again, just to, if you could emphasize a little bit how you started this initiative, and also, where do you start such an initiative when you think about helping communities have access to clean water when you started a few years ago? Where do you start? What's the first step?
Sure. Thanks again for having me, and I apologize for the connection issues.
It's quite all right.
So when I first started Faith Africa, initially our focus was going to be on education, until we realized that there was an even bigger problem, and that is the issue of water-related illnesses, which prevents children from going to school to begin with. As you know, water-related illnesses are the largest killer of children under five. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the WHO estimates that water-related illnesses kill more African children under age five than HIV, AIDS, malaria, and measles combined. And so this is an issue that we are looking to tackle all across Africa. And earlier you mentioned the important role that water played in really dealing with the Ebola outbreak in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. And Faith Africa has been at the forefront of that. And we saw firsthand the important role that water, access to safe water, plays in directly improving health by promoting best hygiene practices and reducing disease transmission. And so we've really been focusing on building water infrastructure and water access points, mm-hmm. to ensure that people have access to water so that they can practice proper hygiene.
Okay. And Ms. Davies, water.org has been working on the same issue. What is your approach? What is your strategy?
Mm-hmm. Water.org has a couple of different approaches, two main ones. And one, we work directly with
local organizations, local NGOs, to design community-based water and sanitation projects that are largely funded through charity. So drilling boreholes, you know, helping communities educate themselves about the lack of sanitation and hygiene education. And then on the other side, water.org works with financial institutions, so mainly banks and microfinance institutions, to create loan products for water and sanitation. Now, these are really low-cost loan products. For example, you know, latrines that maybe cost around $100 US, or water connections that are also around $150 US. And so these are two ways, working with the public sector and trying to leverage capital so people can take out loans to improve their own water and sanitation situation, and then also working with communities that may not be able to afford to take out loans to be able to build infrastructure.
Okay, and we are going to take a short break, but before we do that, I have a question from Michael. He's in Ghana, and this question is for you, Ms. Jones. When we come back, you will respond. He says, how has the Ebola outbreak affect your work? And we'll have your answer when we come back, so don't go away. We'll be right back after this break.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this, whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, we are discussing water and sanitation with our guest, Sarah Kabar-Jones, founder and CEO of the organization Face Africa, and April Davis, a senior manager for Africa and Latin America with the organization water.org. And before the break, Ms. Jones, we had a question from Michael in Ghana. We wanted to know how the Ebola outbreak has affected your work, if it has, at least.
Sure. Thank you for the question, Michael. So last year was a really challenging year for us. And when the outbreak started to intensify around June, July, we temporarily suspended all of our wash operations. One, we wanted to ensure the safety of our construction teams, but also we wanted to devote our full resources to fighting and curbing the spread of the virus in the areas where we work. I am happy to announce that we have resumed our full wash operations, and our efforts in the areas where we work were extremely successful because of our grassroots presence and the extensive track record that we have with the communities that we work in.
Okay. And we have this question from Cynthia in Kenya. And Ms. Davis, let me direct this to you. What are some alternatives when there is no clean water available in an area? Do you have any suggestions?
That's a good question, Cynthia. Thanks. I would say it depends on if it's a semi-arid area or an arid area such as a desert, or an area that does have water, especially groundwater, rainwater, that can easily be captured or extracted. So in deserts, it's really difficult. Access to water is usually obtained through deep drilling into an aquifer, and if that's not available, sometimes condensation can be caught, and sometimes even in cases, salt water, if the community is close to the ocean, can also be used and desalinated. All of those options are quite expensive and take a lot of investment. In the case of a place where there isn't currently water available, but it does rain, or there is water that's close to the surface of the ground, then the solutions are much simpler. A rainwater harvesting tank or a rainwater system to capture that water and use it for drinking is something that's a pretty reasonable solution. And then also shallow wells or shallower boreholes are another solution.
Okay. Now, there is this question. I would like both your reactions to this one. What is the most challenging part about addressing water and sanitation? Ms. Jones, you go first, please.
Sure. I think for us, we work in remote, hard-to-reach communities for the simple fact that those are areas that tend to be neglected when it comes to any type of development, really. So we really target last-mile communities where sometimes vehicles or motorbikes can't even access. So if we have to walk 3 hours to get to the community to ensure that they have access to safe drinking water, we do that. So for us, I think infrastructure or the lack thereof in Liberia or in rural Liberia is the biggest challenge for us. But we establish really collaborative relationships with the communities that we work in, and we partner with them from start to finish. So the fact that they are involved in the entire process from the beginning, we work hand in hand with them, it makes the process extremely easier and less challenging.
Okay, and Ms. Davis, Ms. Jones spoke about infrastructure. Would you say the same thing, or do you have another perspective on this?
I have another perspective, actually. I think that I've found over the years that the most challenging part of working with water and sanitation is not actually creating the infrastructure. So we always say drilling the well is the easy part. It's what comes after that or in what comes before it that is definitely more challenging, and that is preparing local communities and local governments to take ownership and sustain these water sources that NGOs are funding and putting into place. So making sure that the community demands the water source and that the community is well-trained in collecting money to be able to make repairs, and that the local government, if the local government has the mandate to also maintain the water source, that government's aware of what's happening and that the government officials have the capacity to be able to repair the source and help the community should it break down. So I find that those other activities are the most challenging in addressing specifically the water challenge.
Okay. And Ms. Jones, when you spoke about infrastructure, you mentioned accessing these remote communities. Now, my question is this. How do you identify these communities if even accessing them is very difficult? What do you ask around? Do you ask to local officials what is the process in identifying what community will receive well, for example?
Well, I will say for Liberia, which is where our efforts are focused primarily at the moment, Liberia is recovering from a brutal civil war that pretty much left the country's entire infrastructure ruined. The rural areas especially have very little to no access to water infrastructure. So there's no shortage of communities that have a need for water infrastructure, but we work very closely with the local county authorities and also water sector partners to identify communities that are in extreme need. And word spreads quickly. So oftentimes when we're working in a community, the neighboring communities learn about our work in the region and then come to us to demand, to request rather that we come in and intervene and help provide access to water. So for us, that's never an issue as far as which communities need access to water. For the most part, there's a huge need in all of rural Liberia.
So to this day, how many communities or perhaps how many people have you been able to reach?
We've been able to reach close to 20,000 people through 50 water access points. And our goal over the next 2 to 3 years is to construct 200 water access points in a county called Riverside County. Mm-hmm. And once we've completed that entire county would have 100% water access.
That's great, and we wish you good luck on that. Ms. Davis, with water.org, I know you work in Africa, in other continents maybe. Tell us about the countries that you work in Africa.
Mm-hmm. Currently, water.org is working in West Africa in Ghana, and then in East Africa in Kenya, Uganda, and Ethiopia. And in each of those countries, in Ethiopia, our programs have largely focused on rural areas and doing community water sources. In Kenya, we focus on microfinance to clients and also some school-based programs. Uganda is the same, a mix of rural and urban areas. And then in Ghana, traditionally, our work has focused on rural communities as well. We're looking to expand as well in the future, and so water.org is always thinking about other countries and other programs that we could be doing. But right now, those four countries are our focus.
Now, when you mentioned earlier the challenges with regards to the aftermath, after you do your part, how do you address this? Have you been able to really rally local governments or, you know, local groups to helping ensuring that the follow-up is done properly and the people are still have access to water in the long run?
Mm-hmm. I can go ahead and start, and then maybe Ms. Jones can follow. With water.org, we work through local organizations. So we work hand-in-hand with local water and sanitation organizations that have been doing this work for a number of years. And so those local organizations really know the culture and the communities and what factors are going to need to be in place in order to sustain these water sources. I mentioned before that we have to work with the local communities in order to build capacity to learn how to maintain and repair and manage the water sources, and then also with the local governments to be aware that the project is happening and support the communities when needed.
Okay, and Ms. Jones, what about challenges in terms of aftermath? When you do your work and then you're trying to move to a different community, what happened next? Do you see any challenges on this level?
Sure, and similar to what Ms. Davis said, we also work hand-in-hand with the communities, and we involve them at every stage of the work. For us, for Faith Africa, we are the local organization on the ground, so there's no sort of middleman that we have to go through. We work directly with the communities, mm-hmm. and we build our water systems with the goal of each project becoming community-owned. So we set up water committees, we train pump mechanics, and we really do equip them with the skills and tools that they need to handle any type of system repair and maintenance. And then on the issue of monitoring and long-term sustainability, we exhaustively monitor all of our projects, every single one of them, every 3 to 6 months for the first 2 years. And we submit progress reports to the sector ministry. So we do involve both the local and the national government. And then we commit to monitoring projects for up to 10 years after implementation. Okay. But I think it's extremely important that you equip the community themselves with the tools that they need to maintain the projects themselves.
Okay, and we are going to wrap up soon, but I wanted to get your last words. Let me start with you, Ms. Davis. Could you speak briefly on what you hope to see moving forward with the whole issue of water sanitation?
Yes, thank you. I would like to see water.org's mission is to be able to see everyone in the world be able to take a drink of safe water. So I think that we will continue working in various countries, continue building up private-public partnerships to mm-hmm. be able to scale what we've been doing and to keep our traditional charity model, but also move away from that to leverage other resources to be able to have an even greater impact in the future.
Okay, and Ms. Jones?
Similarly, I do believe, and we at Faith Africa, we do believe that water poverty is solvable in our lifetime, and we're working extremely hard to make sure that the 300 million people in Africa that lack access to safe drinking water can have access to safe drinking water, and I think collectively we can make that happen.
Okay.
And it's really great to see that the sector.
Okay. Okay.
Gather to see that.
Wonderful. Ms. Jones, thank you so much for joining us today with Face of Africa. And April Davis with Water.org, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington. Thank you for joining us for today's edition of Health Chat. I'm here with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.